All right, if you're staying in here with us, you can go ahead and turn in your Bibles to Genesis chapter 41. And we've been in a series in the book of Genesis since the beginning of the year. And we are in the long section on the life of Joseph. And we are kind of right in the middle of that. And last week what we saw and what we talked about was that God is a God who's at work in the waiting. Many times in our lives, we don't see God's activity. Maybe we don't feel all the things. We don't know exactly how He's going to work out all circumstances. And like His Word says, for our good and for His glory. It's kind of messy, kind of murky. And Joseph has been in that situation. But God has sustained him. It's been about 13 years now since his brother sold him into slavery. So I don't know how bad your week was this week. How good it was, but it probably wasn't as bad as Joseph's, who was sold into slavery, falsely accused, all kinds of things going on in his life. But God's taken care of Joseph, and what we've seen is that it's God's presence with Joseph that has made all the difference. God is with him, and in Potiphar's house, that leads to Joseph's success, right? He raises up, and he is elevated to be second in command in Potiphar's house, this very important man in Egypt. God has been with him, even in the false accusations. God was with him. God was present in those circumstances. And he was with Joseph in prison, right? He's been with him in prison, and Joseph's been faithful, but really God has been with him and caused everything that he does to succeed, and he has been elevated again, you sense a pattern here, to the second in command in the prison. He has become the man who's in charge of everything except for the leader. God was with him, and that makes all the difference. Now, Joseph is remaining faithful. As far as we know in this story, he has remained faithful in this time of waiting, this time of injustice in his life, this time of not knowing what God is up to in his life. And I think he's remained faithful. He's been a picture of faithfulness and righteousness through all of this. But I think Joseph also wants to be set free, right? And we kind of saw a glimpse of that last week when Joseph interprets the dream for the cupbearer. What does he say to the cupbearer? Remember me, and maybe Pharaoh will hear, and I can get out of this pit, this prison that I'm in. Now, did that happen? No, right? We saw last week, and this is where we stopped, is that the cupbearer totally forgot about Joseph. And we pick up the story today, and it has been 2 years since that happened. 2 years have passed in between these chapters. And Joseph thought, maybe this will be my ticket out. Maybe this is how God's going to work this out. And then he had to wait 2 more years. Let's jump in chapter 41. We'll read it together. In verse 1 through 8, we'll start. This is after 2 whole years, Pharaoh dreamed. He dreamed that he was standing by the Nile, and behold, there came up out of the Nile 7 cows, attractive and plump, and they fed in the reed grass. And behold, 7 other cows, ugly and thin, came up out of the Nile after them, and stood by the other cows on the bank of the Nile. And the ugly, thin cows ate up the 7 attractive, plump cows. Anybody had a dream like this ever? Okay. And Pharaoh awoke. And he fell asleep, and he dreamed a second time, and behold, 7 ears of grain, plump and good, were growing on one stalk. And behold, after them sprouted 7 ears, thin and blighted by the east wind. And the thin ears swallowed up the 7 plump, full ears. And Pharaoh awoke. And behold, it was a dream. So in the morning, his spirit was troubled. And he sent and called for all the magicians of Egypt and all its wise men. And Pharaoh told them his dreams. But there was none who could interpret them to Pharaoh. 2 years have passed since Joseph has met and got built a relationship with and interpreted the dreams of the baker and the cupbearer to Pharaoh. 2 years. 2 years of waiting. 2 years of hoping. 2 years of dreaming about being set free, of having his wrongs being righted. And he's hopeful. Maybe the cupbearer will remember me. But 2 years have passed. Nothing has happened. He's just stayed in prison. Just as has happened twice before in the story, Joseph had had 2 dreams, 2 men had had 2 dreams, and now Pharaoh has 2 dreams. And we're told that both dreams are similar. right? Both dreams have this the same imagery, different pictures, but there's a similarity between these dreams, right? In the first dream, seven fat and happy, and I probably should have had a picture, right, of what does a fat and happy cow look like? I don't know. You could picture it in your mind. A fat and happy cow. Seven, that's not what it says. What does it say? Fat and plump or healthy and plump. These are good-looking cows, seven of them, and they're standing by the Nile in the river in Egypt. And then all of a sudden, as only in dreams, seven scrawny and ugly cows. Maybe some of you have raised some of those kinds of cows. I don't know. Maybe you've raised the other ones. But seven scrawny and ugly cows, they come up out of the Nile, as cows do in dreams. And what do? They eat up the fat and happy cows, right? Obviously, right? Ugly, thin cows eating up the seven attractive cows. Pretty wild, right? Pharaoh wakes up. He's disturbed, as you would be too if you had this dream. And he doesn't understand what it means. He knows that this is either God or something divine trying to speak to him, but he doesn't understand it at all. So he wakes up, takes some melatonin. No, he doesn't do that. He goes back to sleep, and he dreams again. And this time, there's seven fat and happy ears of grain growing on a stalk, right? There's seven really plump heads of grain that are growing, and the same thing happens. There's seven scrawny and ugly and blighted ears of grain, and what happens? The ugly, thin, blighted ears of grain eat the happy, fat and happy ones, right? This is the second dream. Now Pharaoh's really disturbed, because not only has he been told this message once, now he's been told this message twice, and he's not sure what it means. It says that he woke up and his spirit was troubled. These are the same language that the cupbearer and the baker had used in prison, that their spirit was troubled. Why? Because they did not understand what God was trying to say to them through these dreams. And so the cupbearer and the baker, what did they were troubled. Why? Because they didn't have any wise men or magicians that they could call and say, hey, what does this mean? What do you think God's trying to say to me? But Pharaoh does have them at his disposal. So it tells us that just like has been done before in Egypt, right? He calls together his magicians, his wise men. He gets everybody together to try to figure out, what is God trying to tell us in this moment? What does this dream mean? He wanted to understand. He wanted to understand and have this connection with whatever God was trying to tell him. But the sad news of the story is in verse 8. It says there was none who could interpret to Pharaoh. None of these wise men were able to interpret what God was saying to Pharaoh. Why? Well, we know, as Joseph has already said in the last chapter, interpretations belong to God. If God's the one that's trying to speak, then God's the one that's going to speak. And so there is no interpretation. Pharaoh's left at a loss. God's trying to speak to me, but I don't understand it. I don't get this. If only there was somebody in Egypt who could interpret dreams. I wonder who that could be. Let's keep reading. Verse 9. It says, then the chief cupbearer said to Pharaoh, I remember my offenses today. When Pharaoh was angry with his servants and put me and the chief baker in custody in the house of the captain of the guard, we dreamed on the same night, he and I, each having a dream with his own interpretation. And a young Hebrew was there with us, a servant of the captain of the guard. And when we told him, he interpreted our dreams to us, giving an interpretation to each man according to his dream. And as he interpreted to us, so it came about. I was restored to my office, and the baker was hanged. Then Pharaoh sent and called Joseph, and they quickly brought him out of the pit. And when he had shaved himself and changed his clothes, he came in before Pharaoh. And Pharaoh said to Joseph, I've had a dream, and there is no one who can interpret it. I've heard it said of you that when you hear a dream, you can interpret it. And Joseph answered Pharaoh, it is not in me. God will give Pharaoh a favorable answer. Now, as soon as the chief cupbearer hears of Pharaoh's situation and his just torn up spirit that he can't understand this, he remembers what? He remembers, I've been in that situation. I was supposed to tell you something. Anybody ever forgot something? And then you remember later that week or later that day and you're like, oh wow, I really dropped the ball. This cupbearer feels that in this moment. He remembers, oh yeah, there was a man in prison, a young Hebrew, who, when I had a dream, he told me exactly what was going to happen, and it happened just as he said, right? He's a young Hebrew. He worships this God, and he says that interpretations belong to God, and so maybe he too could help you, Pharaoh. He tells Pharaoh about this young man, and I think at this point, Pharaoh's just, hey, yeah, whatever. I mean, I don't care. I don't. Whatever you are, whoever you are, if you can tell me what God's trying to say to me, bring him to me. So Pharaoh sends word to the prison, right? And when Joseph, you gotta put yourself in his shoes that day, right? He's been waiting. He's been waiting for this call. He's been waiting for this moment for 2 years in this prison. And finally that day, he hears his name being called. Hey, Pharaoh wants to see you. I'm thinking he's shook. I'm thinking he's either really happy and excited, or he is really concerned, because maybe Potiphar has brought his charges to him, and maybe he's going to be executed, or maybe this is bad, maybe this is good, I don't know. But maybe it's all going to be okay. Maybe God's working in this and working this out for his good. It's interesting, the text says that they brought him out of what? What does it say? They brought him out of the pit. All right. Is he in a pit? No, what's he in? He's in prison. All right. But he's been in a pit previous to this. The pit is symbolic for all of the places that are low that Joseph has been put into unjustly. It reminds us of how low his life has gotten, but how God continues to elevate him, how God continues to raise him up out of the pit. Not just the pit in his homeland and the pit in Potiphar's house and the pit in prison, but all of his pits. God is the one who continues to raise him up when he falls. And so Joseph hears his name, and he goes and he shaves, he cleans up, he changes clothes, and he comes and he stands before Pharaoh. And Pharaoh tells him that he's had two similar dreams, and he needs Joseph to interpret it. It's interesting. Pharaoh gives him all the credit, right? He says, I've heard that when you hear a dream, you can interpret it. Pharaoh misses out on the point of this. He's just focused on, you have some special talent, some special skill that I need. But what does Joseph immediately do? He makes it very clear in his first words to Pharaoh, it is not in me. It's not something that I can do. It's not something that I possess all by myself. He says, God will give Pharaoh a favorable answer. He's telling Pharaoh, this foreign leader who does not worship God, who does not know the Lord, who has a polytheistic, who's all over the place, right? And Joseph gets a standing before the Pharaoh, the man who holds his life in his hands, and his first words are not about him, not about me. His first words are, no, it is God, right? I don't have this. This is not on me. It is going to be God who gives you this. And so Pharaoh goes through, and he shares these two dreams. We're not going to reread all the details. You get it. There's 7 cows eaten by 7 cows, 7 heads of grain eaten by 7 heads of grain. And just like before in prison, as soon as Pharaoh tells him, Joseph immediately tells him what they mean. Look at it in verse 25. It says, then Joseph said to Pharaoh, the dreams of Pharaoh are one. God has revealed to Pharaoh what he is about to do. And the 7 good cows are 7 years, and the 7 good ears are 7 years. The dreams are one. The 7 lean and ugly cows that came up after them are 7 years, and the 7 empty ears blighted by the east wind are also 7 years of famine. It is as I told Pharaoh. God has shown to Pharaoh what he is about to do. There will come 7 years of great plenty throughout all the land of Egypt, but after them will arise 7 years of famine, and all the plenty will be forgotten in the land of Egypt. the famine will consume the land, and the plenty will be unknown in the land by reason of the famine that will follow, for it will be very severe. And the doubling of Pharaoh's dream means that the thing is fixed by God, and God will shortly bring it about. So Joseph hears these dreams, and because God is with him, because God has given him this ability, he immediately tells Pharaoh, here's what they mean. He says it with confidence. He doesn't doubt, because he truly believes, and he is relaying the word of God. He is speaking the word of God to Pharaoh, what God is trying to do. And so what God is showing Pharaoh, hey, here's what's about to happen in Egypt and in all the land. There's going to be 7 really good years. And then there's going to be 7 really bad years that wipe out every good that happened in those first 7 years. And he tells Pharaoh, you've had this dream twice. God gave it to you. This is not something we can go to God. Will you please change? Will you please relent? No, this is fixed. This is sure. And it will be soon, or immediate is the implication. And so Joseph just boldly shares, this is what God is going to do. Now, you think about it. This really should have been the end of the story right there, right? Because Pharaoh just needed Joseph for one thing. I just need to know what this means, and then you can go along your way. It really should have been the end of Joseph's story right there. Pharaoh should have just dismissed him. Thank you for the message. We'll see you later. Go back to your pit, right? Go back to prison. No longer needed. See, but God doesn't just give Joseph the interpretation. God also gives Joseph wisdom. He also gives him discernment and boldness in this moment, not to just tell Pharaoh, hey, here's what's about to happen. But he gives Joseph discernment to say, here's a plan. Here's a plan for how to endure this. And so Joseph doesn't just stop there. He's been asked, he's kind of reached the limit of what Pharaoh has asked of him. Joseph doesn't just stop and dismiss himself. No, he boldly goes on and shares, here's what you need to do. Look at verse 33. He says, now therefore, let Pharaoh select a discerning and wise man and set him over the land of Egypt. Let Pharaoh proceed to appoint overseers over the land and take 1/5 of the produce of the land of Egypt during the 7 plentiful years. And let them gather to all the food of these good years that are coming and store up grain under the authority of Pharaoh for food in the cities. And let them keep it. That food shall be a reserve for the land against the 7 years of famine that are to occur in the land of Egypt, so that the land may not perish through the famine. And this proposal pleased Pharaoh and all his servants. And Pharaoh said to his servants, can we find a man like this in whom is the Spirit of God? And then Pharaoh said to Joseph, since God has shown you all this, there is none so discerning and wise as you are. You shall be over my house, and all the people shall order themselves as you command. Only as regards the throne will I be greater than you. So Joseph boldly shares not only the meaning of these dreams, but also, hey, here is God's wisdom and how you can get through this, how you can save your people, how we can get through what is coming. He tells him, you need to set someone in charge. You need to set a number of trusted people in charge over this operation. And for 7 years, what we're going to do, we're going to take 20% of everything that we get. We're going to take 20% of all the crops, and we are going to store them, right? Now, this goes against everything in our human nature to save for the future. This is not a human broken by the fall instinct to go, hey, I got so much. Let me just put this away in case something bad happens. This is God's wisdom, right? Because when things are really good in our own finances or in our national finances, what do? Oh, let's spend more. Let's go. Let's do more. Let's use this, right? And Joseph's saying, if we can show some restraint for about 7 years, then we will survive what is beyond this. We need to save. We need to live on less than we have in order to save for the future. So we're prepared for the difficult circumstances ahead. This is true for all of us. This is not the main point of this story by any means. This is not a lesson on saving and preparing for those sorts of things. It's important to learn from this. But this is God's means of saving many lives in this situation. Joseph shows this plan to Pharaoh. And I don't know if Joseph felt, okay, I don't think he was applying for the job necessarily. I don't know if he thought, hey, this is going to lead to a promotion for me. I think he's simply sharing wisdom and the discernment that God has given him. And when Pharaoh hears it, he's like, that makes a lot of sense. We need to do that. We need to do that. And he's looking around and he's going, I called together all these magicians. All these wise men, the best of the best are here. And this little Hebrew prisoner has told me way more than any of you jokers. He's looking around going, there's none of you that I trust with this task. And what was the difference? What was the difference in the eyes of Pharaoh? It was God with him. Just like it was to Potiphar, just like it was to the captain of the guard in the prison, it was God with him that led to his success, that led to his favor, that led to his being promoted, being elevated to second in command. And so Pharaoh sees this and he goes, you're the man for this job. There is no one here that has the Spirit of God like you do. And so Pharaoh elevates him. This is an unreal story, right? This is unbelievable how Joseph has gone from the lowest of lows to now being the second in command of all of Egypt. Pharaoh put him in charge of everything, trusted him with everything except for the throne, just like Potiphar had done, just like the captain of the guard had done. I think we've got to sit for a second in that and remember where Joseph has come from over the last 13 years. That he started as a slave, and now he is a servant of the king. He started in a pit, and now he's in the palace, right? I think Joseph in this moment is starting to realize that it's starting to manifest what God had promised him in that dream so long ago, that he would be elevated to a position and people would bow down to him in order that he might save many. He's starting to see it fall into place. Let's look at how it plays out. Look at verse 53, and we're going to skip a few verses here and there. Look at verse 53. It says, the 7 years of plenty that occurred in the land of Egypt came to an end, and the 7 years of famine began to come, as Joseph had said. And there was famine in all lands, but in all the land of Egypt there was bread. And when all the land of Egypt was famished, the people cried to Pharaoh for bread. And Pharaoh said to all the Egyptians, go to Joseph, what he says to you, do. So when the famine had spread over all the land, Joseph opened up all the storehouses and sold to the Egyptians, for the famine was severe in the land of Egypt. Moreover, all the earth came to Egypt, to Joseph, to buy grain, because the famine was severe over all the earth. Just as God had given dreams and had given the meaning to Joseph, and just as Joseph had told Pharaoh, what he said happened. Just as God had said it. 7 years of plenty. There's excess. There's more than they need in those years. Everything's going well, and they save, and they put back, and they store it up. And just as Joseph said, 7 years of famine begin. And just as God had given wisdom to Joseph, he stored up food for those 7 years instead of just eating extra or using it or whatever. And when the famine happened, they were prepared. And no one else was prepared. No one had food except for in Egypt. There was no bread except in one place. There was no means of provision except in the wisdom of God. Now, this story is not hard to understand. I've spoken it to you in ways that are different, but this story is really pretty easy to understand, right? It's not that complicated. And we can understand the Joseph and the details and the Pharaoh and the dreams and all that sort of stuff. And those are good. But briefly this morning, I really just want us to think about, how does this story point us to Jesus? Before we're going to celebrate the Lord's Supper here in a minute to close out our time. And we're going to remember the death and burial and resurrection of Jesus. We're going to remember that this is all we have. That we need Jesus and Jesus alone to save us from our sins. There's only one means of redemption and salvation, and that's through Jesus. Just like there's one means of redemption and salvation during this time, and it's through the wisdom of God in Egypt. So how does the story of Joseph point us to redemption? See, Joseph, from all we know, he is a righteous man. He's not perfect, but he is a faithful and he is a righteous man. Joseph is unfairly and unjustly treated by his family, by those around him. But Joseph had the Spirit of God in him. He had God with him to lead him, to guide him. And Joseph had wisdom from God that led to the salvation of many from all the nations. I don't know if that reminds you of anybody. It's supposed to. Jesus was completely righteous, completely perfect. He did not sin. No matter what earthly situation happened, he lived a perfect life. And Jesus was unfairly and unjustly treated, just like Joseph. He was arrested. He was convicted. He was crucified for sins that he did not commit. He did it in our place, right? And Jesus had God with him. He is God, and he also had God with him. He was in fellowship with God his whole ministry to lead him, to guide him, to speak through him, to give us the word and the wisdom of God. And through that, through God's presence and God here on earth with us, through his sacrificial life and his death, it's led to the salvation of many people, not just from that people, but from all the nations. You see, this story is not just about, wow, crazy circumstance. Let me tell you about a guy who used to be in prison, but now he's serving the Pharaoh. It's cool, right? We can enjoy that. This story is meant to point us to Jesus, to remember that God has been at work to bring about salvation for many, for every single one of us. And this story is way more than about learning how to deal with adversity or trying to remain faithful in hard circumstances. This story is about Jesus, about his perfect life, his sacrificial death, and his powerful resurrection. And because of that, you and I can be saved. We've tried all kinds of things in our life, just like all the people outside of Egypt. They've done everything they can, but they can't satisfy the hunger that's within them. There's only one place that they can go. And that's true for us today too. We've lived our lives and we've sought satisfaction and purpose and meaning and goodness and righteousness in so many other places. And the simple truth of today is there's one place that has bread, and that's Jesus. There's one place that has salvation, and that's in Jesus. We can try all sorts of other things. None of them satisfy. There's only one place that we can go to for salvation. And God has been working that plan from the beginning until now. The story of Joseph is about Jesus. And so we're going to celebrate the Lord's Supper today as we do frequently here as a church. And so I want to invite our deacons to come forward, who are going to help serve the Lord's Supper today.